And what it really came down to for me is this idea that manure is not inherently bad for the environment. It's not worse than inorganic fertilizer. But if you haven't seen it managed properly and according to best management practices, you're more likely to hear about manure running off of a field. You smell the manure, there's an odor. So there's this kind of misconception that manure is always bad. And so the way we've kind of taken our programming here in Nebraska is trying to connect both the value of that manure to the soil and cropping system, but couple it with what are the best management practices that we want to be using so that we're not polluting the water.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Hi-D is a pure, effective 25-hydroxy-D3 solution to help pigs improve their vitamin D status. Improve bone health and lifetime productivity with Hi-D. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/hy-d. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Healthier pigs are good for producers, people, profits, and planet.
Essential Ag Solutions, bringing innovative science-based solutions to livestock producers.
Hello, and welcome to the Swine It podcast. I'm Dr. Tara Donovan, your host, and today I have Dr. Amy Millmeyer-Schmidt as my guest. Dr. Schmidt is a professor and extension livestock bioenvironmental engineer in the Department of Biological Systems Engineering and Department of Animal Science at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Welcome to our show, Amy.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here, Tara.
Great. Well, so today we're going to discuss the value of integrating livestock and cropping systems. But before we begin, I would like you to just, Amy, go ahead and take a few minutes, introduce yourself to the audience, give a quick summary of your background, and then what led you to this area of ag.
Sure. I grew up in Southeast Iowa, not in a farming family, but around my grandpa and my uncle who farmed. And so I was always had kind of an interest in the environment. My teachers in high school said, you should go into engineering. So I did. And I went into ag engineering. After I finished my bachelor's degree at Iowa State University, I stuck around and did a master's there. And I worked for an extension engineer that I really hadn't had experience in extension prior to working with him. And I found that to be a really fulfilling area to work because it was, you know, one-on-one with farmers helping solve problems and give recommendations. So when I left there, I took a job for almost 2 years in industry, working as an environmental engineer for a swine production company in North Missouri. And then there was a position that opened at the University of Missouri in extension, and it was right in line with what I wanted to do. And so I applied and was hired in that position. That was back in 2001. And so since then, I've worked in extension with livestock manure management, air quality and mortality management. Moved around a little bit during that time and actually completed my PhD in biological engineering during some time that my husband and I were at Mississippi State University. So we've been at the University of Nebraska now since 2012. And this is a great place to work with livestock and manure management. It's a very intensive agricultural state and very happy here with the different projects that I get to be involved with.
Great. Well, thank you for that. Well, the University of Nebraska is where I did my undergrad, and so in animal science. And I also grew up in Southwest Wisconsin. That's where I live now, in central Nebraska. And so very familiar with agriculture. I grew up on a cow-calf crop operation. So actually didn't have pigs, but I ended up as a swine veterinarian for my career. And so, we have some connections, at least certainly to the state of Nebraska.
Looking to boost the productivity and health of your swine herd? Hi-D is the original pure source of 25-hydroxy-D3, proven in over 100 research trials and fed to millions of pigs each year in North America. Hi-D improves bone strength, immune health, and enhances overall performance. Whether you want to improve sow longevity, get heavier nursery pigs, or help your grow-finish pigs thrive, trust the original, proven 25-hydroxy-D3 Hi-D. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/hy-d.
So as we dive into integrating livestock and crop operations, Amy, will you start us off by just describing the landscape of livestock and crop production in Nebraska and the area? Working in extension, I know that's a big part of what you do and so what we're going to talk about today. So just give us a little bit of the highlight of how, cattle operations, swine operations and crop, which is a big part of the central Midwest.
Yeah, so Nebraska is kind of unique in the topography just because there's a pretty significant change in climate as you go east to west across the state. So the eastern part of the state tends to have more rainfall, less irrigated cropland. And as you go west, you get into sandier soils, irrigated cropland. We see a good concentration of our beef operations in the western part of the state simply because it is a drier climate, and that's those systems that are open to the environment. We have to collect any rainfall that falls on the surface of the feedlot. So as you can imagine, in an area with a lot of rainfall, that's a lot of wastewater to collect and have to manage. So we also have a lot of cow-calf grazing operations out in the western part of the state in the sand hills. We have good rangeland out there. We do have a relatively small dairy industry in the state that tends to be concentrated in the eastern part of Nebraska. Swine production is kind of throughout the state, but I would say mostly concentrated in the eastern half of the state, and then not as much in the northwest or the panhandle of Nebraska, where we just, the soils and cropping systems aren't as conducive to having swine liquid manure storage and application. And then we do have quite a few poultry in the state. So we've seen a pretty significant expansion in the last 5 years in broiler production, with Costco being involved in a new processing facility in Fremont, Nebraska, and having contract growers that produce the chickens for that. And then we do have some egg laying and egg processing industry in the state as well. So it's pretty diverse in terms of livestock and poultry. And then, corn, soybean, those are the typical rotations that we see in the Midwest. But Nebraska does have some dry bean production up in the northwest part of the state. And, winter wheat, rye, different crops that are grazed by livestock too. So fairly diverse cropping systems here as well.
Yeah, it is. It is really diverse. I spent the majority of the last 20 years in Wisconsin, but I travel across Iowa and even Kansas, Oklahoma, and Nebraska. But none of those states really have the same, I guess, diversity that I grew up with. And so I think it was great for you to share that with us, just in the heart of the Midwest, an area that's just a little bit different. And really, lends to this topic very well in terms of integrating that livestock and crop together and how they can be useful to each other. So tell me about, we'll dive into just the area of manure management and swine operations. It's the Swine It podcast, so we'll focus a little bit on the swine part of it. So tell me the advantages and the area of the swine operations and the value of land application and the value of that for the crops.
Yeah, so one thing that we've seen change in the last, I would say, 20 to 30 years, we used to see a lot more lagoons that were used for storage of swine manure. So the buildings had a shallow pit, manure was flushed out to a lagoon, And the benefit initially of legumes was that the nitrogen volatilizes, and which means it's off gassed into the air, and the phosphorus settles out in the lagoon to form sludge at the bottom. So the liquid that's pumped is very low in nutrient content. So you didn't need as many acres to land apply that. Over the years, as fertilizer prices increased, we started to really put a lot of value in retaining those nutrients. Why let them go if you're going to have to turn around and purchase inorganic fertilizer for your crop? So we've seen a pretty significant switch to deep pit systems that are underneath the building. You get much less volatilization. You have much less rainfall entering that storage. It's a concrete basin, so it's secure, and we don't have concerns about overflowing, right? Because we don't have that precipitation that's unpredictable that could add to that storage. And we have a more concentrated manure. So that makes it so that farmers get more nutrients or more bang for their buck, I guess you would say, out of that manure. They can fertilize more acres and supply nitrogen and phosphorus and other micronutrients from that, potassium as well. As far as the way that we apply it, again, when I was a kid, I remember my grandfather, my uncle, with the broadcast manure spreader. So this is a tanker, and they pulled it through the field, and it was a huge rooster tail of manure that sprayed out of the back onto the soil surface. We also know that applying to the surface is going to allow some of those nutrients to volatilize as well. And so over the last several years, we've moved away from that surface application, and we inject swine manure more. It doesn't tear up the soil as much as, say, surface application and then coming back with a disc and turning the soil. And so it lends itself well to farmers that want to reduce tillage in their fields as well. For farmers that are raising pigs and have their own land where they're growing crops, probably the biggest benefit that I hear from those farmers is I can apply manure 1 year when I'm, ahead of corn, and then the next year there's still nutrients available for my soybeans. I may have to come back and supplement something, but I'm not applying fertilizer every year to that land. It also, we see the soil quality increase over time as manure is applied. It's providing organic matter to the organisms in the soil. We know that when we add carbon to the soil and we create an environment that's favorable for organisms, that they're going to multiply, they're going to be more active, and that activity is what improves soil physical properties, things like aggregate stability that helps hold soil particles together, in improved infiltration, water holding capacity, and those sorts of things. So I think for our swine farmers, they are used to using their manure, and so they know the value. They see the value every day. I think where I see the biggest challenge is in showing people who don't have livestock as part of their agricultural system what manure, how manure benefits a cropping system. So,
yeah, absolutely. It's interesting your description of the lagoon storage and the difference in the availability of those nutrients versus a deep pit. And that completely makes sense to me. But not working in that space, I didn't really appreciate that part of it before, as even a lot of sow farms, at least that I'm familiar with, almost always had lagoon type of systems, are even moving to deep pit. And so just a difference, and it completely makes sense on the utilization of the resources from that. And certainly the sustainability of the whole process of raising livestock and then putting it back on the land in this whole circle, right? So what a great sustainability program. So let's talk about the challenge, like you said, of maybe a person who's always had crop production and not livestock production, how to get those farmers working together and those systems working, kind of being more integrated. My assumption is that you work in that space of trying to connect the different areas of livestock. What's the biggest challenge with that? And what are you guys doing, to get those farmers talking?
Yeah, so I think, I know some of the barriers that exist for those crop farmers, why they don't want to use manure. We did a survey we've just gotten it accepted for publication and will be coming out in the next several months. But we were looking at, how do farmers and the people who advise those farmers, so whether it's extension educators or certified crop advisors, agronomists, people who are helping make decisions about fertility management and cropping systems. We wanted to understand how they view manure. What do they know about how it impacts different parts of the soil and the environment? And kind of understand if you're not using it or not recommending using it, why not? And one of the things that came out of that, and I guess I shouldn't have been surprised by it, but I kind of was everybody seemed to have a really good understanding or favorable view of how manure impacts soil biology. It improves soil biology. It improves soil physical properties. It improves fertility of the soil and it improves crop yields. But then when they were asked about its impact on the environment, it was generally more negative. It's not good for the environment. And what it really came down to for me is this idea that manure is not inherently bad for the environment. It's not worse than inorganic fertilizer. But if you haven't seen it managed properly and according to best management practices, you're more likely to hear about manure running off of a field. You smell the manure. There's an odor. So there's this kind of misconception that manure is always bad. And so the way we've kind of taken our programming here in Nebraska is trying to connect both the value of that manure to the soil and cropping system, but couple it with what are the best management practices that we want to be using so that we're not polluting the water. So, for instance, I can talk about manure improves soil aggregate stability, which is going to reduce the risk of erosion. Along with that, I would recommend grass waterways, grass buffers around the field, different techniques that can, if you do have runoff or erosion, you have something that is slowing down that runoff, capturing the sediment before it reaches a water body. And within permitted animal feeding operations, so any animal feeding operation that is large enough to require a permit, there's a requirement for staying back, having a setback distance between your land application and any sensitive water bodies or wells. And we don't have those requirements with inorganic fertilizer. So I think that's a misconception as well, that that inorganic fertilizer is handled and managed more carefully. And I'm sure that, there's plenty of farmers who do handle it in a way that that we would recommend. But I also know that they're not having to develop nutrient management plans the way a permitted animal feeding operation does. They're not reporting to their state government how they used that inorganic fertilizer, where they put it, what they expected as a yield, what they got as a yield. And that's something that when you're working with manure as a permitted operation, you do have to report all that. And you do have to plan it. And if you applied manure expecting a certain crop yield and you didn't get that crop yield, you need to account for that the next year that you didn't use all the nutrients that you applied to the soil. And so to me, that's a really important message to get out, is that best management practices are really the key to using manure or inorganic fertilizer in a way that reduces its impact on the environment. We also know that the nitrogen, so when you apply inorganic fertilizer, it's all plant available nutrients. And there's a reason for that. We want to put it on. We want to know that the plants can use it that cropping season. With manure, depending on the type of manure you're working with, but we think about swine manure, there's a portion of the nitrogen in there that is inorganic, and it's the ammonium, and it's readily available. When you put it on, it's available for the crops to use. The other fraction is organic nitrogen, and that is tied up in organic matter. And in order for it to be available to the plants to use, that organic material has to be broken down in the soil. And that's where the microbes come in. They break that down, they convert it to a usable form of nitrogen, and then the plants can utilize it. And so with manure, we look at how does that nitrogen become available over the cropping season, and then even in subsequent cropping seasons as that organic material continues to be broken down. And so I think there's both when talking with farmers and talking with community members who are opposed to manure application or to livestock operations near them, just getting at that point that manure is not bad inherently. If it's not handled properly, then it can be detrimental to the environment, but so can inorganic fertilizer. And so with both of those, we're putting nutrients into that cropping system, but only one of them has nutrients that become available over time, has organic matter that feeds the organisms in the soil, and ultimately can improve the quality of that soil, and that's the manure. Otherwise, we're putting inorganic nutrients in. Anything that doesn't get used by the plants is going to be lost to leaching. So nitrogen that doesn't get used is going to leach through the soil. And then we're not building the quality of that soil over time. We're putting in nutrients, we're harvesting crops, we're just continuously taking from that field and not putting back that organic matter or, feeding those microbes in the soil. So to me, there's manure along with other practices. I mean, manure is not the only thing that can add organic matter back to your soil and help protect the soil and improve it. But it is, I would like to see farmers see it in a more positive light for that quality. One of the barriers we realize that's pretty serious for them is, I don't know, we estimate 40% of that organic nitrogen will become available in the first year after you apply it. On average, yes, that's what becomes available, but that's affected by the type of soil you put it on, the temperature and moisture of that soil, things that affect the microbial activity in the soil. So if you have a particularly cool and or dry season, you won't have as much of that nitrogen become available that first year as you anticipated. And so what we are working with now and kind of talking to farmers about is, that inability to predict what becomes available is a concern, but we can put manure on and we can use in-season methods to determine if the crop is deficient in nitrogen or is needing more nitrogen. Then we can go back and we can supplement with inorganic fertilizer. So we're not really rolling the dice the way we used to by putting on manure and just hoping that it does provide the nitrogen that crop needs for that whole season. So a lot of the technology, I think, that has evolved over the last decade or so is kind of helping us address some of those barriers to using manure. I think, odor is always going to be one of the issues, particularly if a crop farmer has not used manure ever. And then they go put manure on, their neighbors are going to know it. And there's some concern about complaints about odor and things like that. So I think the ease of ordering up the formulation of inorganic fertilizer that your crop needs and not having to worry about whether or not it all becomes available in the season. That's a big concern for crop farmers, but it's not something insurmountable, and we're working on demonstrating that to the farmers that we're not going to hurt your yields. We can still meet the nitrogen needs of that crop and do it in a way that is more conducive to improving soil, reducing water quality concerns and things like that.
Absolutely. It's a really great description of the difference for me, having worked in livestock all my life, but really not in the space of the value of the manure and the differences and that area. So that was really helpful. So what about the actual application maybe challenges? Because if you're a livestock producer and you also have crops and you're putting that manure on your own land, you've invested in the, the equipment to do that, et cetera. What about that space? Is that a challenge to get these two operations working together? And is there, some separate businesses that do that for you that you can hire that out? How does that work?
Yeah. So that transportation of manure and the application, if you've not had livestock and you've not been applying manure yourself, it's very unlikely you'll go out and invest in the equipment it takes to apply manure once or maybe twice a year. In Nebraska, and I know in a lot of other states in the Midwest, there's a very successful industry of custom applicators. They can either come and take manure from a nearby farm and go to another farm, and they could leave it there if it's a solid manure and let that farmer apply it when they're ready, or they can do the application for them. Probably the biggest barrier to moving manure from where it's produced to where it's going to be used is the transportation cost. And so you look at swine manure it's got a lot of water. It's a liquid. You're hauling water that doesn't have value. Right. So there's only so far you can carry that manure in a tanker truck before you've paid more in fuel costs than you are getting out of it in nutrient value. So we see a pretty small radius of how far you can move that manure from the farm and still have value when you land apply it. If we are able to pump it through a network of pipes and not have to truck it, that's less expensive. Otherwise, most of our swine farmers in Nebraska own enough land around their swine operation to utilize their manure. So they're not faced with having to truck it somewhere and get rid of it. We see that more with poultry operations and with beef operations, simply because, beef manure loses a lot of its nitrogen by sitting on the soil of sitting on the surface of the feedlot, and people want nitrogen. They want phosphorus from it as well, but the balance of phosphorus and nitrogen is not aligned well. So if you apply it to meet a nitrogen need, you're putting on far more phosphorus than you need, and probably don't need to come back for 4 or 5 years to that field with that manure. So it's very expensive to transport beef manure and have any value left in it once it gets to where you're taking it. The other side of that coin is poultry litter that's very high in nutrients. It's a dry material. You can put it on at a much lower rate and still meet crop needs. So we see poultry litter being transported, many miles and still having value left in the nutrients when you take away that transportation cost. But, our custom applicators in the state, they know the regulations, they know setbacks from sensitive areas, they know, how to make those recommendations of application rate, and they're precise in how they do that application. They handle solid manure and liquid manure. So you can find somebody, in the state who has that experience and has the equipment and can do that application for you. It's just a matter of how far does it need to go and can you afford to truck it that far and still have value remaining after you've paid those costs for trucking it. So, you know, like I said, with swine manure, we're probably not going more than a couple miles from where that manure is produced to land apply it. We're not going to truck that 10 or 15 miles if we can help it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I didn't realize that there was that much difference between other than water content with different livestock operations. So that's interesting. Definitely have learned a lot from you, Amy. So tell me, being involved in, you know, a lot of research at the University of Nebraska, what's a research project you've worked on that our audience might find interesting or surprised by?
So I think the first thing I would say is being an extension, and I don't know if it's being an extension engineer that makes it unique, but I do find that questions that no one else can answer come to me. They come to the engineers. You know, if it's mortality management, if it's odors, and I get some strange questions. And I feel like in extension in particular, you have to be able to pivot and address current issues with research, even though we all have to kind of have our research program that we're working towards over time. There's times when you need to pivot from that and do something that will address a current need. And so one of the things in the last several years that I have worked with is mortality management. So it's not manure management, but we saw with COVID plants that had a reduced capacity to take animals for processing. And, you know, we know in the swine industry, that's a very, it's a very well designed flow of animals through that system. You can't just hold back 2,500 pigs for an extra week or an extra month because they can't go to market. So we saw a lot of situations where animals had to be euthanized and disposed of because there was nowhere to go with them. And we also see that as a concern if we were to have a foreign animal disease outbreak in the U.S., that we're going to have a lot of animals that we need to dispose of on site because we won't be able to move them. So that whole area of how do we most efficiently deal with animal mortalities on the farm with the least negative impact on the environment and the best outcomes for biosecurity. So we've worked over the last few years on comparing composting versus a shallow burial with carbon method, how much leachate is produced, what's in that leachate, what temperatures can we reach in those disposal systems. You know, and I think one of the interesting aspects that has come out of it is I'm a big proponent of the shallow burial with carbon disposal method. I'm not a big fan of just burial of mortalities, even though that's an acceptable practice. I would rather see a situation where there's some organic material, some carbon material in that system to help hold on to the leachate that's produced during that decomposition of carcasses, because it can be fairly significant. So I think that's, for me, one of the things that we'll start working more on in Nebraska is promoting those mortality disposal options and the planning that goes behind it so that you are prepared to handle that sort of situation if and when it arises. Hopefully we never have a foreign animal disease outbreak here, but we need to be prepared for it if it does happen. And that means knowing what you're going to do with animals that need to be disposed of.
I'm so thankful that we have experts like you that can pivot and work in those types of spaces. As a swine veterinarian, foreign animal disease, you know, isn't preparedness isn't new, but what we have seen is with just some movement of African swine fever across other countries, the risk gets higher and higher. And so as a group, you know, we've always been concerned about it, but having, I guess maybe one of the few things that good that maybe came out of COVID is that we were able to get some more preparedness done for foreign animal diseases, at least that lives in my space, and understand maybe it'll, I guess what I have seen in some other operations is it's now an alternative to the mortality disposal method that they were using before, which may not have been as biosecure. So that area is really interesting and growing, and I'm appreciative of that, you know, new people working on it. So Yeah, I'm excited that maybe we'll come up with even some better methods of mortality disposal that can be useful back onto the soil again in the same sustainability program. Amy, before we sign off, do you have any final thoughts or take homes for our listeners from today's conversation?
I mean, to me, the biggest take home is this idea of promoting manure and understanding the value it has to the soil and to the environment, that it's not a contaminant if it's handled properly. We also, you know, we tend to compare that to our inorganic fertilizer. And the fact is we improve the soil, we reduce leaching of nutrients, we reduce runoff of nutrients when we're using manure to build that soil quality. If we're not adding that carbon material back to the soil in some way, then the inorganic fertilizer, just we continue to take from the soil and we fail to build that soil back up over time. And so the productive capacity of the soil decreases. So I really think, again, whether I'm talking to a crop farmer or a concerned citizen, that's my take home, is we need to realize manure actually improves environmental outcomes when we're using it according to best management practices. And so we shouldn't be afraid or be opposed to manure being applied to cropland. It's really a beneficial input to the system.
Yeah, that's a great message.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Vaxinova, formulate to your needs. Custom-made vaccines. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost pig health and performance. Nexus, powered by SAM, where science meets performance. SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions. Uniferon 200 from Pharmacosmos, the iron dextrin for baby pigs, which promotes faster growth. Better production performance starts with Eastman Choline Chloride. Visit eastman.com. At Nexus, powered by SAM, we redefine livestock nutrition with science-backed innovations that enhance performance, maximize efficiency, and promote sustainability. We connect producers with the future of animal health and productivity through cutting-edge feed technologies and environmentally conscious solutions. By addressing the demand for efficient, sustainable nutrition, we reflect SAM Nutrition's commitment to excellence, delivering premium, scientifically proven solutions that drive results.
So we're concluding our time together with Dr. Amy Milmeyer-Schmidt, a professor at the University of Nebraska. We've been discussing the importance of integrating livestock and cropping systems. If you have comments for Amy, if you have comments for us on our podcast show, please send them through on your platform. If you like our show, and give us a thumbs up. But before we let Amy go, the hallmark of our show is to ask our guests three specific questions. So, Amy, what is your favorite book or resource that you use in your area of expertise?
So, it's kind of an old school resource that it doesn't exist anymore, but the Midwest Plan Service that was operated out of Iowa State and is kind of a North Central region effort has produced a lot of really good engineering guidebooks for design and management of everything from farmstead electricity and building materials and construction of, you know, pole barns to manure management and air quality. And I still have a big section of my bookcase that has those resources in it from the years that the Midwest Plan Service was in operation, and their timeless resources. And then the other is, I guess, would be standards that the American Society of Ag and Biological Engineers put out for mortality management, for manure management, and those sorts of things, because we, you know, standards are there to help us do things according to evidence that we have shown is the proper technique or the proper process. So
yeah, kind of the basics of, we talk about the swine care handbook, and that's kind of the old Bible, so to speak, of, you know, flow rates and space and et cetera. So sounds like a similar kind of resource. So what about a book or resource outside of your area of expertise that you think our audience might be interested in?
I feel like I don't have a lot of really like go-to resources outside of my area. The things I think about, you know, if it's working with, you know, a small meat processor who has offal that they need to dispose of, I'm probably going to go to my colleagues either here or in other states that have done that sort of work. So I think my best resource is colleagues within extension and within those other fields. That to me is one of the best things about extension, is that if you don't know how to answer a question, you probably know somebody who can help you answer it. And so I would say my colleagues with that expertise that I don't have is a very valuable resource.
Yeah, I can tell you how many times I called my colleagues on an issue that was new to me in my field. So no, absolutely. So our last question is, share with us an attribute or characteristic that you feel sets successful professionals apart from others.
I go back to a mentor I had at the University of Missouri. Charlie Fulhage was his name, and a lot of people in the industry will know who that was, particularly if they're in Missouri. He was an extension engineer there. And I think the thing that impressed me the most about him, he was really brilliant as an engineer. There were a lot of things that I would go to him for to explain to me more than one time, because he just had a really good handle on it. But he was always very humble and, you know, never made you feel bad for not knowing the answer. And I think that's really important as I'm mentoring graduate students and undergraduate students in my program. I'm there to help them learn, not to make them feel inadequate when they have to ask a question. And so my goal is, you know, I think it's important to be someone who is giving back to your profession and helping others be successful, because none of us get where we're going on our own. So, you know, I've had help getting where I am, and I want to help other students and faculty in the field get where they want to go and help them along the way.
Yeah, so important as a mentor to be humble and approachable, right? So no, a great one.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. That concludes our SwineNet podcast, and look forward to meeting you sometime in the future.
All right. Thank you so much.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.